It's time now for the Todd Leonard Show. Leave those negative stories behind as we focus on the positive and hear from those who give back and help others. Let's start your day with some inspirational stories. Now, here's your host, Todd Leonard.
Good morning, everyone. Thank you so much for tuning in today. Once again, we're going to have an incredible show. We're very honored to have Dr. Mary Lo Frumento right here in Morris County. She's been doing incredible things. We're going to explore that with her. Before we spend some time with the good doctor, I also want to give a shout out to two of my really good friends. Dr. Glenn Goldstein, local Randolph doctor, appeared on the show about 6-7 weeks ago, just returned from another successful mission for remote area medical down in Tennessee. He brought his son Zach and Greg, and Dr. Glenn's been doing that over 10 years, and shout out to Dr. Glenn, doing great things to help others in need and giving free dentistry. It's just incredible. Also, my great friend Lee Vartan was here last week from Daytop, and just a great show. I was thinking of him yesterday. Lee was back into the Atlantic Ocean. In February, raising money and awareness for Daytop and those battling addiction. So God bless you too, Lee. You're doing great work. So doctor, good morning. I have my new friend here, Dr. Mary Lo Frumento, right here in Morris County. Marianne Lo Frumento. Marianne, good morning. Thank you so much for joining us.
Oh, good morning, Todd. So happy to be here to talk to you this morning.
Yeah, so I wanted to, for those folks that don't really listen to the show that often, I'd like to get a little background about yourself and kind of who you are and all the great things you've been doing to help others in need. So why don't you tell us a little bit, what type of doctor are you?
I am a general pediatrician. Currently, I am sort of in charge of the nursery, all the newborns, at Morristown Medical Center, where I've been on staff for 36 years now.
Wow, you look great. 36 years. I was trying to do the math. That's impressive. So in terms of your specialty, you deal with newborns?
Right now I deal with newborns, but I was in private practice for over 20 years right here in Morristown. I had taken over the practice of Dr. Bayer Coggeshall, who had been here since 1940s, and Franklin Pediatrics, and I'm very proud of my practice. But then I moved on. I actually took some time off and wrote two parenting books, produced a series of videos for parents, and then kind of went out and promoted that for a few years. Came back to Morristown and then took over not only the newborn nursery, but also I helped run the pediatric residency program, which trains all the young doctors to go out into the world and do more good things.
Wonderful. I'm always curious about why people take a career path. Why did you get involved in medicine, and why particular with, newborns and pediatric medicine?
I always ask that of all my young doctors too when they're starting out, to kind of reflect on that. I grew up in the Bronx. I went to school in New York at Barnard College. I then went to University of Pennsylvania. I went to Columbia. But what was interesting is I never wanted to be a doctor. I always wanted to be a writer or a musician or something else. And when I was in college, I volunteered in the pediatric ward at Columbia Presbyterian at Babies Hospital. And it changed my life. All of a sudden, I realized that was what I wanted to do. And then I was fortunate. I actually went back there for my residency. And that led to my coming out here to Morristown for a one-year job as chief resident. And it turned into a whole lifelong career and raising my daughter here and my husband. We lived here for the last 35, 36 years. Very happy in Morristown.
Yeah, it's a great county. I'm raising my family as well. We think really highly of the county. And Morristown Medical Center is certainly an outstanding facility locally. So obviously I brought you on, Doc. When I learned more about, what you've done over the years, I was extremely impressed to your incredible humanity. So we're going to be talking a lot about this Hands Up for Haiti. And candidly, I didn't know very much about it. I remember vaguely there was a horrendous, horrible earthquake, but I really didn't know much about Hands Up for Haiti. So why don't you take us through what happened in 2010 that became your personal earthquake as well?
Well, it was horrendous. It was a major earthquake that shook a very small island with millions of people centered around the city of Port-au-Prince. Over almost 300,000 people lost their lives. About a million were displaced, meaning all their homes were destroyed. Medical centers, hospitals, schools, and a lot of people were displaced, especially children, were sent to the north of Haiti. Now, I had never done any of this work before. This was entirely new to me. I had treated children in Morris County and families who, had what they needed in life, and had all the medical care. And then all of a sudden, my friend, Dr. Jill Ratner from Westchester, we were actually residents together at Baby's Hospital. And she asked me to come down with her, and we went. She went first right after the earthquake, and then invited me to come back a few months later with another group of doctors and nurses. And at that point, I had never done any of this work before, but what I saw was not even the destruction, which was still there. The buildings were collapsed, crushing, the amount of destruction of the buildings didn't even tell the story of what had happened to the people and the children. They sent us to the north of Haiti because pediatricians, we always say, go where the children are. And they had been sent there, and there was such a lack of medical care. So we decided at that point, because it really shook me, I just stood there and watched children who were had no clothing, no shoes. They were playing around in mud and muck, and it really broke my heart. I saw how hungry they were. I saw how malnourished they were, and that shakes you to the core. And you can watch all of that on TV and see it in pictures, but when you're standing there in that situation, when you're seeing their eyes, when you're holding their hands, it shook me. It was my personal earthquake. And it said, you can help. We have so much resources here. And I had skills. And so we decided to go down. We formed a nonprofit at that time, Hands Up for Haiti. And our mission at that point was to bring medical teams down to help, which we did then for several years until things stabilized. And then we began to evolve, saying, you know what, the sustainability is much more important. We need to work on education. We need to help the Haitian medical professionals do their job. And so we have evolved now into an organization where we are teaching and helping and seeing patients and supporting the programs that we have set up.
So, Doc, obviously that's just an incredible situation you put yourself into. But how did that kind of work in terms of just, you have a very successful practice here, right here local. There's a devastating earthquake. How does that work with your job responsibilities, your family? I mean, you're going to go to Haiti. I mean, realistically speaking, United States is much different than Haiti, especially after such a devastating earthquake. So who do you go to and say, listen, I have to go to Haiti? I mean, who basically, how's that work out?
At that point, I had literally just started my job at Morristown as the pediatric hospitalist for the newborn nursery, and I was helping with the residency program. So I said, I have to do this. They were very generous. They gave me all the time I needed to go down there. We used to go down a week, 10 days at a time. And then I decided, well, you know what? Let me take some of the residents. Let me take some of medical students so they can also learn. And then that began the pediatric global health program at Atlantic Health, which began to involve the pediatric residents and the family medicine residents. And I did that with another local pediatrician, Dr. Heman Kairam, and the two of us started to take the residents down to help out as well.
In terms of just that initial trip down there, I'm trying to understand for all of us kind of what that would be like. So you have a colleague who is obviously, it sounds like she's down there. She needs your help, your expertise, your tremendous skill set to help out in this crisis, this really worldwide crisis for those folks, right? Because it affected the world of almost 300 lives were perished and millions displaced. Do you say to your husband, your daughter, this is really important? I mean, how does that work? I mean, I'm trying to understand the sacrifice and the commitment just to get up and go down to Haiti, which you walked into basically a war zone.
Yeah, it was horrible, a war zone, yes.
Yeah, horrible, you know, loss of life. And you're talking about children with no clothing on, nowhere to turn, desperation. But I'm trying to understand how does that work in you know, inside your, how you're processing this. How am I going to do this? How am I going to tell my family? What made you feel that was you had to do it? Like everybody has that calling in life. But what struck you?
Well, I was afraid to go at first. I didn't think I had what it took to do this. I was a little nervous. That first trip, I'm not going to lie, I didn't have the confidence I have right now when I go down there. I didn't know what to expect. My family was not, they were nervous, but I have to say, my husband has always supported me, in everything that I have done, he had confidence that I would make the right decisions and stay safe. But I'm not gonna lie, they were nervous. My daughter was, in college at that time, and, you know, it was difficult. And when I told people at the hospital, they were also nervous, you know, that something could happen to us. It was a very lawless time down there. But I had faith that the organization that originally invited us to go down would not send us to an unsafe situation.
Right. So we're going to go through the, you know, been doing this over 10 years now, my understanding, based on what, you know, the date of the earthquake and the information. You were so kind to give me a heads up so I could be prepared for today's important discussion. But I always want to understand, you know, that first visit, you know, the dynamics of it and your sacrificing your career, time with your family. You know, you're starting a new position as a hospitalist at a great medical facility, and you're leaving that, you're going basically into hell to help others clearly in need. And realistically speaking, Haiti, once again, you know, there's a lot of strife, a lot of violence, a lot of the turmoil with the devastation. Who knows what's going to happen next? But was it just something, a calling? That's what I'm trying to get my hands around.
It was, when my friend came back and she described what she had seen initially right after the earthquake. Now, this was about 7-8 months later, and I listened to her, and I said, I can't do this work. I don't have any preparation for this. And she said, no. She said, you do. You have the same as I do. She was a general pediatrician. She said, the children, you have to see the children. She showed me photos. She told me the stories. And then something inside me said, I can do this. I must do this. It just was, it really was something that inside of me said, you can do this. And then I got on the plane, and when I got off the little small plane that had left us up there, I was still nervous, but suddenly once I got there, once I saw the need, all my fear disappeared. I knew I could help. And then I said, we have so much here. You know, we have so much here in the United States. And I knew that all my families that I took care of, they have their resources. But this country, the poverty, the level of poverty almost exceeded the damage of the earthquake. So when we saw these children, and they just had nothing. And when you're a pediatrician, it breaks your heart, because that's all you're dedicated to doing. You want to take care of children. You want to make sure that they survive, that they can thrive. And once I got there, first step off the plane, first step day one, I knew that this was going to be my new calling. This was going to be something. I wasn't going to just come in for one trip, take some photos, and leave. This is where we have to make a difference.
Did you, growing up, or did you have a role model that looking back, maybe inspired you to have the inner strength and the humanity to help others in need, especially to basically leave your thriving practice and your family and do something, you know, certainly outside the box, in the sense of you're leaving the United States of America and going into a devastated area. Do you look back and think about who might have inspired you along that journey to make that decision?
Yes. I had so many great role models growing up. My parents were both educators in New York. You know, they always, I think they raised us to be a certain way. But when I came into private practice here in Morristown back in 1985, Dr. Bayer Coggeshall and his wife Mary used to go every single year. They would take a month off and leave the practice, and they would go to many places in the world to do this type of work. And I never really understood it, but they were such generous and wonderful people, and he really believed it, and he would come back and he would talk about his trips, and it must have planted a seed. At that point, I was very young, and I just was having my daughter, and I was starting a practice, and it wasn't on my radar, but it must have planted the seeds, because what he started way back, I continued, and I felt like it was a little bit of a legacy that he left me.
Right. And one of the things, you know, for the listeners is sometimes you don't know how people impact your life, but obviously, that wonderful doctor was a tremendous role model for you, as well as your parents and others along the way. For those that are listening right now, if they want to help out with Hands Up for Haiti, I always want to make sure they have the contact information. Is there a website? How would they reach out to the organization?
We definitely have a website. It's handsupforhaiti.org. We are celebrating our 10th year as a nonprofit this year, which is actually, as NGOs go, non-governmental organizations, that's pretty amazing that we made it 10 years now. So we're celebrating that this year. There is a donate page on there for those of you. We exist entirely on private donations. And support from, thankfully, Morristown Medical Center has been extremely generous. The Benjamin Josephson Fund at Overlook Hospital has been very generous. But for the majority of our funding, which funds all of our programs, we depend on individual donors. So if you are at all inspired today to help, please go to our website. Just go on the donate page, and you can also see all the things that we do and watch some videos that are there as well that may help you to understand more the kind of work that we do now.
Wonderful. Now, like I said, it's really a blessing. I mean, to really learn about what you've been doing for 10 years and helping others, especially in Haiti, who clearly still need a lot of help. You know, one of the things that you provided me with the doctor, which was really an eye-opener, is information about Haiti. You had provided me with some information about the life expectancy, which was staggering to me, at least. The life expectancy in Haiti is only 63 years. In our United States of America, is over 78 years. I mean, that's a 15-year longer life expectancy. And some of the other information, the mortality rates and everything else, clearly is staggering. Also, the real need still in Haiti. Before this tragic earthquake in 2010, do you know anything at all about Haiti? Did you think about Haiti?
I guess I knew about Haiti just as a citizen of the world, but I did not understand the whole history of this country, a very proud country. It was the first country that actually liberated itself from slavery and became the first nation led by former slaves, and it became a very proud nation. But it has been plagued throughout the centuries by multiple historical and geopolitical factors that have kept the country from really progressing, so that now it is the poorest country in the Western Hemisphere. It is an hour and a half from Miami. It's 3.5 hours from here, and it is, the level of poverty is the poorest on this side of the world. It matches some of the poorest areas on the other side of the world in Africa and India.
So when you arrived on that first mission back in 2010, is it another, you know, group of just small, a team of just volunteers and doctors, nurses, other professionals, just trying to figure out what we can do as a team to help these folks in need?
That's exactly what happened on that first trip. We had an ophthalmologist, we had several nurses, we had pediatricians, and what we saw was, what can we do to help? And what we said was, let's begin to come down, make some connections. And I will say, when you do this type of work, it helps to continue it in the same location. Some people go all over the world, and that's great. But when you establish a presence, it becomes your, for me, it became my second country. And I had to learn much of the language for Creole, for French, which was not natural to me, and to be able to communicate. But we got great translators, and every time we brought a team down, we did something else. But we started to acquire more doctors and nurses from Haiti to be able to work with. And then we said, you know what? Just us coming down is not enough. We have to set up programs that are going to go on year round. So we have evolved now into an organization that our mission is heal, teach, and support. We go down, we help support, we have ongoing clinics that we pay salaries for all the doctors and nurses that we work with in Haiti. We have people who run our organization. And recently, when there was a fuel crisis that prevented a lot of people from getting anywhere in Haiti, and we had to, and many hospitals and clinics were shut down, we did not shut down our programs because our team on the ground, and even though at that point we couldn't send people down, our people on the ground delivered life-saving malnutrition supplements every single week to the families. They found a way to get there with community health workers checking on everyone. We didn't lose anyone during that period. And I'm so, so proud of my staff in Haiti because they have taken on the mantle, and now we come and support them. So we have totally evolved now into a major support group in the north of Haiti. We're extremely well respected and well known. And we work closely with the Ministry of Health. That's another thing I'd like to say, because you have to connect with the country that you're working in. It doesn't work if you do not work through their medical system. And for the hospitals we partner with and with other organizations, we have really made an impact.
Well, one of the things that you were real, I could see the passion in your face and in your voice, is how proud you are of what you and the co-founder have done, the incredible team you've assembled, and also through your hard work for many years now, you're able to support Haiti, and they're actually standing up on their own now. They're building their infrastructure to basically help themselves, which is fabulous. It's essential, I think, certainly going forward. One of the things that you had touched on a little bit is your ability to bring folks down too, to open their eyes up, right, to what's going on there, and maybe be a role model and see kind of the opportunities. What are your thoughts about that as kind of a teaching lesson in life and helping others?
Well, you know, you have to inspire the next generation in anything that you do. And I hope that through this work, I'm able to inspire the next generation of physicians and nurses who will be at least touched by this. Because now we've taken, probably 100, whether doctors in training or nursing students or nurses. And they have gone, and I will tell you, every single one of them has been touched emotionally by these trips. They come back changed. When they start seeing patients back here, they know what they did not have back there. And they had to work on their own. There's no internet right there. They can't just look at their cell phones and figure it out. They have to use their physical exam skills because there's no x-ray. They have to really think about their patients and take histories. It makes them better doctors because they know that they need to use their own self and their resources. But beyond that, once they see the poverty and the lack of everything that they have, they're changed forever. And many of them have now been inspired to not only come back on trips, but some of them to lead trips. And I am just hoping, I've planted some seeds like Dr. Coggeshall planted in me years ago, so they will go on and continue this work anywhere in the world that they want.
Well, no, I mean, obviously, you know, it has a ripple effect. I had the D'Amicos on, Chris and Laura D'Amico, about Kindness for Christopher, and talks about how you touch one life and all of a sudden it has, you know, a ripple effect, and it affects so many others. In terms of that experience, because I could see you're also really proud about that, is lifting up the students and folks following in your incredible footsteps as well. One thing, though, you mentioned is the doesn't sound like there's a lot of diagnostic studies available in Haiti, at least at certain points in the care and treatment point of contact. Are the folks at Hands Up for Haiti trying to work on that so they have the latest updated diagnostics available?
Yes, our organization partners with other organizations that are actually providing the infrastructure and support for hospitals. So we have two hospitals we work with, a private hospital and a public hospital, and we help support the other organizations that bring the infrastructure. We're not big enough to bring in, newborn isolettes for a NICU, for a neonatal unit. However, our team went down and set them up. And now this hospital has a neonatal unit that has capacity for about 15, 20 newborns. But we helped set up the original, and we provide the training in newborn resuscitation, which is really critical because newborn mortality, maternal mortality, those are our biggest things that we work with to prevent mothers from dying in childbirth, which is very common, unfortunately. And we train people to even illiterate traditional birth attendants who work in the villages and deliver babies in the home, our Helping Babies Survive program. We do training to teach them how to resuscitate a newborn when you have nothing around. And that saves lives.
Right. I mean, I know we talked a little bit about Morristown Medical Center. I mean, they have a fantastic neonatal unit. I'm blessed that both of my babies were born there, and they have an incredible team there. And it seems like you're taking that font of knowledge and teamwork and just really knowing, being on the cutting edge of the best way to treat newborns and giving that information to Haiti, which is vitally important, especially with all of their issues. In terms of that experience, when you're there now, have you been going down pretty regularly the last 10 years?
I think last week, I just came back last week, and I think that was my 30th trip. So
okay.
I go quite often, several times a year. I don't lead every trip, though. Hands Up for Haiti has about 8 trips a year. There are other groups go. We have an ophthalmology team that does a lot of training of ophthalmologists in Haiti. We have my OBGYN team, which actually involves some of the doctors at Morristown, go down and do help with treatment for cervical cancer, which is the leading cause of death in women in Haiti, is cervical cancer, something that with pap smears in this country, we have reduced to a very minimal problem. So all of our programs have their teams. Hypertension, we treat these adults with massive hypertension. And these, I just saw a 106-year-old woman there who has outlived many, many people. And she gets her, once a month, she gets her medicine, blood pressure is controlled, and she was so grateful.
Right. And, you know, obviously, that's another great example of, you know, folks in Haiti are turning the page in a very positive way, little by little.
Very resilient people.
And right. They're strong people. So we're going to take a short break. We're going to be right back with Dr. Marianne Lo-Fremento in 30 seconds.
The Todd Leonard Show is sponsored by the Leonard Foundation, whose mission is to support the children and families who are battling pediatric cancer and those in need of food and assistance, women's shelters, and other important social services in the community. They also proudly support those fighting pancreatic cancer. They feel it's vitally important to help those in need in our amazing community when they need us the most. Please join them in extending a helping hand and go to leonardcharity.org and donate now. Together, we can touch many lives.
Thank you once again for coming back with Dr. Marianne Lo-Fremento, an outstanding physician locally here, but really a beautiful person for over 10 years going to Haiti and really making a huge difference in the world, which is really just an incredible thing. You know, I was driving here this morning. I was thinking, you know, right here locally, we have someone touching lives in Haiti and really saving lives. And with that devastation, it takes a special person to uproot themselves and get right into to basically a crisis. And God bless you, doctor, for what you've been doing for over 10 years with your team. You know, I was asking some questions because one of the things about the show is I love to hopefully motivate the folks who are sitting on the sidelines and thinking about what they can do and use their gifts in life to make the world a better place. So as we go through this, you know, I want to make sure the listeners recognize maybe this could be a calling for them in one way or another just to get involved. So in terms of some of the programs, doctor, this Hands Up for Haiti, you know, it's really captured my imagination in terms of just, it almost seems like you go back into time. You have so much knowledge here local, and then you go into Haiti and you're like, oh my God, we learned this, you know, many, many years ago, but you're teaching, you're lifting up. So can you give our listeners a little bit of an idea of the kind of programs available through Hands Up for Haiti?
We realized when we began our organization that there were a lot of resources within the Haitian people. There is a real desire to work on their issues and do things on their own and with support. The doctors and nurses are... they're educated. They have a lot of the basic knowledge. They do not have the resources. They don't even be able to sometimes go online and take like updated courses like we do here, or listen to a lot of lectures. So we do also support any organization that does that kind of education within their medical system. But they want to do this work. They're so dedicated. The doctors and nurses who have stayed in Haiti, are so dedicated to helping their people. They work with a minimal compensation. They do not get compensated the way doctors and nurses are compensated here. So we support them in every way we can to do this work. So our programs, we decided we could run some clinics, but even more importantly, we needed to run programs because programs are more fluid. Our biggest program is our malnutrition program. There is a high rate of malnutrition. One out of five children is severely malnourished. And I'm just going to say that we have lost children who got to us too late. They come to us, we rush them to the hospital, and Hands Up for Haiti pays for all the hospitalization of any patients we admit to the hospital or who have surgery. But some of these patients did not make it, and it breaks your heart. They come to you too late. They're horribly emaciated or their bodies are swollen, the two types of malnutrition that you can have. So fortunately, we teamed up with a group called Medicine and Food for Kids who makes a peanut-based, ready-to-use therapeutic food. It's like a peanut butter paste. And we get this. It's called Medica Mamba. And the peanuts are grown in Haiti, so it actually supports the farmers. And This very high calorie and nutrition supplement is given three times a day to the children who are moderately or severely malnourished. And this is an 8-week program. They're seen in our clinics every week. They get measured and weighed. They also, we have community health workers who go to the home now and make sure the child is getting what they need and there are no obstacles to getting their treatment. That's proved to be a very successful thing because sometimes you don't know what's going on in a family and there might be issues and problems with the child getting the treatment. So we're very careful about that. And we have treated now, I think it's 2,000 children, and getting them before that critical crisis time when they have to be hospitalized or perhaps die is really making a difference. And when you see them one time and then I come back weeks later and you see them again. And I just saw a mother who just broke down thanking us for having saved her child's life.
Well, what's more important than that? I mean, you're saving lives. I mean, that's just an incredible blessing to be able to use your skill and knowledge with your team, your devoted team. You talked about the doctors in Haiti, too, though, so I have to imagine you've developed some very, very important close relationships with the local doctors down there. What's that relationship like? I mean, how's that work when you come down there now? You've been on 30 missions down there, which is really just shows your dedication. What is that like?
I'm so proud of the doctors that we work with. Our medical director, because we have a medical director in Haiti, and she's an amazing, amazing doctor with such love of her people, whether they're young or whether they're old, the patients. She just has a joy about her, and it's such a pleasure to work with her and to help. She's not a pediatrician. Most of the doctors there are not specialists in that regard. They are more like family doctors. So what we do is a lot of helping in terms of pediatricians and also training her in the malnutrition program, because that's not something that is automatic, and it is something you have to medically follow. But she helps run our hypertension program and this one. And we have another doctor who does our cervical cancer program, a just amazing OBGYN, Dr. Nelly. The other doctor is Dr. Gentil. And they are wonderful. And we have sent, actually, Dr. Nelly, we've sent her to the United States for training, advanced training in treating cervical cancer. And we also help support her in all the work that she does to help there.
Right. I can only imagine. I mean, the relationships you develop now, you know, 10 years going strong, and you're building this incredible infrastructure. But obviously it's a team effort, right? You have the team here in the United States going down. You have the folks locally here in Haiti. Your team is obviously devoted to the same mission, which is saving lives, improving lives, lifting, you know, Haiti up, hands up for Haiti. You know, that's such a really beautiful, just short statement, but it's hands up. You know, we're together. Right in the world. And I think that once again speaks volumes the kind of person you are in your team. In terms of these other programs, one of the things that, you know, obviously the real world is what's more important than saving the kids? You know, it doesn't matter what part of the world
it's
you
the
live
future.
In. Right. It's the future. And that shows your great humanity and what Hands Up for Haiti is all about. For those listening, once again, if they want to reach out to Hands Up for Haiti, donate or volunteer or just get involved or learn more, is there a website they can access, please?
Yes, handsupforhaiti.org. And there is definitely a donate page. There's also information on volunteering. If you have any medical background or if you have any skill that you think would be helpful to a mission, because sometimes we take non-medical personnel who perhaps can help us in other ways. Definitely we exist completely on independent donors. And so, it's the financial resources that keep us going and keep our programs going, because, and we're very efficient. We've earned, several, stamps of approval in terms of charities, Charity Navigator. We're very well respected in terms of how we manage our money and how we manage our donors' money. Because a little bit can go very far when it is well used.
No question about that. I was also, you were so kind enough to give me some of the statistics and background information about this organization, which I'm sure for the listeners, we're all blown away at just the incredible things you guys have been doing. But in terms of how many lives you probably have saved over these last 10 years, in terms of the outreach clinics, hospitalization surgery funds, all the prenatal care and safe birth programs you've implemented, any idea, doctor, for the listeners, how many lives you think this great organization has saved over these past 10 years?
It's definitely in the thousands. Because I like to think of it like throwing a pebble in the pond. You're just throwing a small pebble, but then you see the ripples. You see the ripple effects that happen. And it's the same thing. Every life we touch in Haiti helps to touch another life. For example, we built, we went into the well business, which is, you think, oh, these are medical people. Why are they digging wells for clean water? Well, you know what? When you turn on your tap, you trust your water. You can just drink it. You don't have to worry. In Haiti, that's not the case. And often, to get clean water, people have to walk half an hour and then carry the water back. And a lot of times, it's the children who are carrying buckets of water back for their homes. So we have built 13 wells now in our various communities that we work with to provide clean water that prevents diarrheal diseases, which is a big problem, such things such as cholera and other routine diseases that impact the health of the people. Each well provides water for 6,000 people in a community. That alone has raised the health of all the community. And we have about 8 communities that we've dedicated to now specifically. We have 13 wells and each one 6,000 people. And those wells are maintained because I learned long ago, there's a saying, don't have the ribbon cutting on the day you start the well. Have the ribbon cutting 10 years later when the water is still flowing. And so we have teams that go out and maintain those wells because just to dig one is not enough. You have to take care of it.
That sounds like an incredibly important program as well, and how Hands Up for Haiti really understands what really needs to be done to lift up the folks in Haiti. One of the things that, you know, obviously you have some perspective now. You know, 10 years, a decade of incredible service, these 30 missions you've been on personally, and the impact you personally have seen from the day you arrived and, you know, 10 years ago, and now you're seeing, you know, the work, and it takes time, obviously, to see the work grow and lift up and improve the quality of lives. But what's your perspective on that, too? A little bit more information for us on just what is that like to see something you put your blood, sweat, tears into, because I'm sure it was pretty much all that and then some. And what's it like now to feel that feeling inside, to know you're making the world better?
Well, it lifts my spirits tremendously. Having just been there and seeing some of the children that I've watched grow up. Now, it's sort of like when I was in private practice here in Morristown, and I would see the kids grow over the years, and now I'm seeing them come back and have their babies, so a whole generation. But now also in Haiti, I'm seeing the same children and seeing them grow up and seeing how they're doing well and seeing some of our former patients, a little boy who had open heart surgery. We were able to send him through another organization and arrange to have his heart fixed. And now he's thriving. He was a 15-month-old baby who was severely in trouble. And now he's about 6 years old, and he's doing great. And so in this day and age, when there is so much negativity out there, when people are feeling a lot of distress about the state of the world right now, and even the state within our own country, I say go out and do something, because it will lift your spirits. It will. It's not just about us. It's not just about what we're doing here. It's about what we need to do for the rest of the world, because we need every person on this planet. And the suffering that goes on around the world is tremendous. There's suffering in this country, too. Pick what you want to get involved in, because it will lift your spirit. It will feed your soul. I know that's an expression that's used a lot, but it is so true, because every trip I go down there, I come back feeling so much joy in my heart. And not to take all the credit for this. This is a team effort. And I'm so proud of our team, both here and in Haiti, for the work that we do. Because, and I just promise you, pick a cause. Do it. It will feed your soul. It will make you feel so much better about the world, yourself, your family, your community.
I love that phrase, feed your soul. I haven't used that yet on the show, but, you know, you're preaching to me in terms of, I appreciate, but I'm like part of the choir here. That's the reason why I do the show, is to motivate folks to do something they're into, whatever it is, here, abroad, whatever, but do something, you know, make the world a better place. And that was something, too, I was reflecting on getting ready over this last number of days for meeting you and the show, for the listeners, enjoyment, and obviously everyone sharing the knowledge. You're sharing incredible information today, is just the beauty of what you're doing, you know, to help others in need, but also the eye opener. I'm thinking, you know, I'm born in the United States of America, raised in New Jersey, raising my family in Morris County. I mean, maybe people don't realize just how fortunate and blessed we are when you go into Haiti and you spend that time and then you come back. What's your view of what folks here in the United States have in terms of compared to what goes on in Haiti?
I think everyone who has seen me on the days when I come back from a trip, especially in the hospital, they know, uh-oh, she just got back. She's not going to tolerate anything that we're complaining about. I mean, you go into a grocery store and you see the plethora of food that we have. And then you go in, I go into my hospital and I see everything that we have and the amount of resources that we can pour into any patient for whatever reason. And then I get really, really upset about the waste. I see the waste of things that we just throw out and we take for granted. Oh, we'll just replace it. Where you see in a country they can't replace it, or they don't have enough food. They don't have those choices. They have to sometimes eat once a day because there aren't that. The food crisis right now is pretty significant. There's some terrible inflation that's gone on because of a recent fuel shortage, which has affected the entire country. So you see that, and then you come back, and if people complain about little things, I'm not good to be around that first week because I just say, oh, you know. And even myself, I turn the faucet on. You flush a toilet. The things we take for granted every single day, it really does change you. And I have to always remind people, we have so much. And yet, what is amazing, I want to say one more thing. The Haitian people, they are very resilient, very strong, and the children are amazingly happy. Sometimes I think I see them playing, they're outside, they're not inside looking at their, their iPads and their little video games. They're outside and they're playing and they're happy and they find joy. Plastic kites. This is my metaphor. These children make kites out of plastic garbage. And they fly 50 feet high in the sky. And then I see sometimes we have kite kits here in the United States and they don't get off the ground. These kids make something out of nothing and they make it fly and soar. And that is so inspiring for me, that metaphor that they are the hope. The children are the hope of that country. And by helping the children, we are helping that whole nation and hopefully the world, because I never know, one child that we help, that child could become a major leader in a country in the future.
No question about it. And I love the kite analogy, obviously. I know everywhere, as a parent, I mean, I want my kids to be active too. And I think you just raised a great example for all of us to make sure the kids here are active as well and be so grateful and thankful for all that we have. I know you talked about, running water and the incredible medical care you get here in the United States. And then you go to a country like Haiti and you realize just how blessed we are here for everything that we are given. One of the things that I thought was important too, though, is the next generation of doctors and nurses that you're kind of leading a path for those to follow. And have you seen some of that kind of pay dividends? Because you've been doing this now for 10 years with some of the younger doctors and nurses.
Oh, absolutely. Even if they don't go out and do this work specifically, they never forget what we have here, and they are touched. And even within our own communities, I follow all my residents. Every doctor that's been through the program, I still keep up with. And I see those who are out there, even those who've gone into specialties. I had one doctor stop me at a conference and say, she's in hematology oncology now. She said, I really want to start a program, in this country. I'm really I'm interested in doing global health work in oncology and looking for those opportunities. I had another doctor who is now going to go to Guinea. She just came with us. She's getting some training, and from her home country and where her family is from, she's going back to make a difference. I have another doctor who's doing that in Nigeria. And so you set the seeds up. And then even some of the doctors who may not, because they're young, they're starting their families. This might not always be possible for people when they have young children, but they've started advocacy right here in Morristown and our own clinics that we have right here in our community where there are people in need. They've started advocacy programs for them. And it also helps them. Let me just mention one thing. We have a population here that is a lot of people who have relocated from Central America. it helps them to understand why people flee poverty. Because until you see poverty, you don't understand why people flee difficult situations. When people have no food, they go to seek resources somewhere else. So it helps them to understand why people try to flee their countries. And I think it has so much of an impact. I've just seen it. I've seen them change and grow and go out and do great things. And I'm incredibly proud of our pediatric residents at Goriev Children's Hospital, because they have really made me proud. And I'm so inspired by them now.
Well, you should be proud, and you've inspired so many today. I was always, wondering about this in terms of just, you leave the United States, you go into Haiti. I mean, realistically speaking, your husband, your daughter, I'm sure, even probably to this day when you come back, you still never know when a loved one leaves the country and goes somewhere, but especially with Haiti, still with a lot of internal issues. What impact do you think it's had on your family doing these great works, this God's work in Haiti to lift them up? What impact?
I do think it has inspired my family. In fact, one of my nieces came on one of the trips, and she's now gone on. She actually helped write a chapter on nonprofits and some of the economic things connected with it. My daughter is a teacher in New York City. She teaches bilingual education. She is definitely been affected by her mother, as much as children will ever admit that. But I just love the fact that she's out there also giving back in her own way. My husband is in finance, and he actually went to Haiti last year for the first time, and it was an eye-opener for him. But I have to say, my husband, John Halsey, he has been amazing. And, to run these organizations, you need the financial support, too, and it does take your own personal resources to do that. So to have the family affected in so many ways, and my sisters, brothers, sister-in-law, brother-in-laws, nieces and nephews, all are very supportive, support the organization, support the work that I'm doing. So even if they're not going, they are making a difference by helping out.
What was that like when your husband, John, did join you and he saw kind of firsthand? It must have been quite an eye-opener. What was that like?
Well, he was greeted like royalty because our team was so grateful to him and had heard about him for so many years, and they were so anxious to meet him. And we actually had gone down for a wedding of someone that we had worked for us, and he got to see the places where we go, and I think he understood then. I'm not sure he understood completely what drove me to do this work until he went there. He's always been supportive, but this was a chance for him to actually be there and see the people and meet the people that are working for us and also the people that we help.
So one of the things that you also had advised me in preparation is the commitment of the organization, Hands Up for Haiti. It's not just the one and done type of charity. It's not just here, get a little publicity and out the door, it goes on to the next. Why do you think there's such a commitment for Hands Up for Haiti to be there for the long haul, to make a commitment really going forward? Why is that?
There is a saying in Haiti that you can leave Haiti, but Haiti never leaves you. And I do believe that every person who goes has a little bit of Haiti that's put into their heart because of the immense appreciation and resilience and strength and the inspiration we get from the Haitian people. When you're working with people who not only need your help, but appreciate your help, there is such respect for the medical people who come. People may have one really nice outfit that they wear for church. Those children come dressed in dresses, with ribbons in their hair. They have such respect for doctors and nurses that it's so evident when you're there. And so when you go and when you're helping people and they have such a respect and appreciation for the work you do and they are so thankful, it inspires you to do more. And I think that has been a big part of the organization. all of us in it, every single board member, every single volunteer, as we're coming on our 10th anniversary now, we are all looking back. We are all reflecting on where we are and the long-term commitment. I guess we'll keep working as long as we're physically able to keep going, and hopefully the younger generation will come back in and take over for us. But this is a long-term commitment. We cannot walk away. I mean, I think a lot of organizations give up. I think they give up and they say, oh, we're not making a difference. It's a drop in the bucket. It's not making a difference. Or they run out of money to do the work. And what we've made a commitment is we're planting the seeds there that this will continue after we may complete our work. I don't know how long it will be, but this work will go on because the people will have it go on, and we will support them as long as we can. But it's in your heart. It's in your blood. I can't not go back. Anyone I go to other countries to, maybe I'll help out or that, I'm going to take this incredible knowledge that I've learned about this type of work and take it wherever I go.
Well, God bless him. That's incredible. I know that you've also received a very prestigious award, the 2019 New Jersey State Governor's Jefferson's Award for your volunteer work. What was that like to get that prestigious award?
I was not expecting that at all. I was nominated by Morristown Medical Center, and I went not expecting anything, and then received the award. And it was for the volunteer work. I forgot exactly how it's a service award, and I was absolutely thrilled. It was being honored by your state has a whole new meaning, and it just was great. You know, it's not the medal they place around your neck and the photos, but just the honor that it means that someone appreciates your work and honors it and wants to inspire other people, which is what that award is about as well.
Yeah, I was so blessed back in 2005 for the ARC of New Jersey as Volunteer of the Year as well. And I also had won the Morris County Award as well for my work with Special Olympics basketball. But I remember having my late parents there, my family, and a few of my buddies. And it was just beyond words just what it meant to me. The award was wonderful. It's in my library, but more importantly, what it stands for. And, you know, just as we talked about, you know, whatever turns you on, whatever feeds your soul. I mean, I think that's critically important. Is there any other last, you know, words of advice for the folks listening today in terms of giving back and helping the community, lift up others in need? Any other parting thoughts, Doc?
I think I want to reflect back on something I said earlier, which is that it doesn't matter what you do or where you do it. But at this time in our history, this is a moment when people need to reach out and help others. It will lift your spirits. It will lift your soul, and you will be inspired. And that means you could help your neighbor in your community who's in distress, or someone who's ill and you're going to support their family. You can help out in your church or in your synagogue and do whatever is needed within your community. And then you can reach out to the world and do whatever you can do, whether it's donate or whether it is volunteer. Do something, because it will be something that will feed your soul, I promise you. It has fed mine, and I'm looking forward to doing this work for as long as I can.
Well, once again, Doctor, you're an incredible blessing. You know, it's a great honor to meet you this morning in person and to basically learn so much more about your passion to help others. Right here in Morris County, New Jersey, you're changing lives. You're making the world a better place. I don't know what's more important than that. And everyone that's so fortunate to know you, your family and friends, your colleagues, are the better for it. You fed my soul today, too, inspired me more to try to do more stuff to help others in need. We definitely need more people like you. I also wanted to let the listeners know next week we're going to have a very powerful, important show talking about teen suicide. We're going to have Wendy and Stephen Suffolk, who sadly lost their son TJ, and we're going to talk about their journey to help others after such heartache. But once again, I want to wish everyone an incredible rest of the weekend. I want everybody to think about helping others in need, lifting us all up. Hands Up for Haiti is a great example. Let's lend a hand up to help each other make the world a better place. God bless. We'll talk to you next week. Take care.